This is the Detroit Sports Podcast Network.
The biggest icon in podcasting.
Welcome in, everybody, to this week's edition of the Doc and Jock Wrestling Podcast. I'm your host, Adam the Jock Strozinski. On today's show, a lot of roster turnover with AEW. There's a lot going on. We'll get into all of that a little bit later on. Vince cashing in again, and this WWE superstar said, I do. We're going to cover all of that in the news and notes. We've got an AEW pay-per-view that we've got to review. AEW just hitting home runs out of the ballpark. And WWE maybe limping to the finish line with WrestleMania? It's weird. We're going to tackle all of it. Helping me break it all down, make sense of all of it, is the one, the only. He is the Doc, John Macaroon. What's up, cuz?
Yeah, it's interesting. We haven't talked about it in these terms, but maybe the build for WrestleMania is maybe just a little bit too long. You got so many weeks to fill and so many shows that you have to kind of create content for. But in the end, when you look at it, WWE's done a decent job of trying to get a lot of people interested in the feud between Cody, Seth, and Roman Reigns and The Rock. And it was a crazy week of wrestling. And I'll say this, I haven't been as excited to talk about AEW, but boy, if AEW did a reset and you harken back to March 2nd, I think AEW could look at March 2nd and say, you know what, this was the opportunity that we had to kind of plant our flag and get AEW 2.0 off the ground. They got two of the biggest stars in the world, and we're going to spend a lot of time today talking about AEW, even though the WWE is in the mix and doing their thing for WrestleMania. So this podcast is going to be definitely exciting, a lot to get into, and WWE did a decent job on Raw and SmackDown keeping people interested, but it just, you look at it, we're only in March 9th. We got another month to go, and I think at this point, people just want to see the fights. And what are you going to do? It's going to be more promos probably now, some stuff that they're going to do to hurt each other. But man, the buildup is long for WrestleMania, and it's starting to show.
Yeah, and look, you have pretty much your two flagship shows in Raw and SmackDown. And to me, Raw really just kind of felt like it was a commercial for SmackDown. It felt like, hey, guys, here's Monday Night Raw. You know what? You better tune into SmackDown. On Monday Night Raw, it really didn't feel like we moved anything along. It really seems like right now WWE has all their eggs in The Rock, Roman, Seth, and Cody basket. And Monday Night Raw, which is both of Seth and Cody's shows, it really felt like, hey, guys, we're not going to do a whole lot here, but we're going to have an announcement on Friday night. So anything that you were expecting to see here, anything that you wanted to see here, you're going to want to wait until Friday night, and you're going to want to tune into Friday. On Monday Night Raw, was there anything that really captured your attention? Was there anything that really caught your eye? Because when I watched it, I was left wanting a little bit more. I was left with, okay, well, I guess I got to tune in Friday to see what happens, because I could have missed this entire episode of Monday Night Raw, and I wouldn't have really missed anything. Were you in the same boat, or was there anything that you were like, you know what, I thought this was really great? Because I was kind of left wanting more from what is and what was a flagship program from WWE.
Yeah, well, outside, and we'll talk about obviously the main characters, I thought Gunther destroying Dominic was pretty awesome. The clothesline that he levied on Dominic was sick, and Dominic sold it well. I think that Nia Jax and the build with Becky Lynch was crazy. Nia, I think, got the win via disqualification after interference from Alexa Bliss. And I look at it and I say that, you know what, the mid-card is firmly in a position where they can do a lot of things. Andrade defeating Apollo Crews was interesting. Obviously, you can't ever discount the Judgment Day. They defeated Imperium. I thought that match was very interesting. And then, you know, the one note I made was, man, Sami Zayn has fallen off. Like, in terms of where he was at a year ago to where he's at now, it just seems like that's a character that should be way higher than he is. And now he's fighting Ivar on Monday Night Raw. So those are my notes from Monday Night Raw. But yeah, it's all highlighted, predicated by the fact that Cody and Seth were going to be advertised to be going to SmackDown to answer The Rock. And what's been crazy, because in WWE, is The Rock doing 10-minute promos on social media has been probably better than anything that shows up on TV. So that's not really good, because of the fact that you got all these characters that can cut promos. But on Monday Night Raw, there was nothing really that stood out in terms of anything anybody said in the microphone.
Yeah, and I think, kind of to double down on what you just said there, it really feels like The Rock has all the time in the world. Yeah, I mean, right? You go back to last week, it was like a 40-minute promo he got. And like Rock and Roman, look, Rock used to get a ton of time. I mean, we used to take over-unders on his entrance being anywhere from 5 to 12 minutes. And then his promos would go anywhere from, I don't know, 20 to 25 minutes. Well, now you add in The Rock, and all of a sudden, you've got to block out at least a half hour of your show just for these two guys to have a conversation. And this build has really seemed like it is just gobbling up time from both programs, from both Monday Night Raw and from SmackDown. And it's like a lot of stuff is either getting cut or a lot of stuff is getting pushed to the side, because these guys need so much time to talk, so much time to tell this story. I kind of want to know where you're at with this story, because look, I am interested in it, but I'm nowhere near where I thought I would be with this. And I don't know if it's just The Rock and it's the long social media promos. It's The Rock and the long promos that he gets on SmackDown. It's this, I don't know. I kind of feel like we know what's going to happen, but maybe they pull a swerve at the last moment. So maybe I'm not as interested, or maybe I'm not as invested. And I think that's probably the word. I don't think I'm as invested as I thought I was going to be in this storyline. And I think that might be the most jarring thing for me. I'm interested, but I'm not really invested in this story. So I just kind of want to gauge where you're at, because you tend to be a really good pulse for these things. I'm not as invested. Are you as invested as you thought you would be, or as you maybe should be in this story?
Well, let me put it this way. It's the story that's being told, but it's not the story people really want to care about. I mean, you have Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes. You have two guys that are wanting to win this match at WrestleMania. But unfortunately, you have The Rock, and it feels like a third wheel, but it's one of the biggest third wheels. It's like a 10. It's like, you know, a couple going on a date, but her best friend is like a super hot model. It's like, damn, okay, the guy's going to be pretty much thrilled that she's there. But at the same time, it's like it's a little bit awkward, and the couple should focus on themselves, the date, the conversation, what they want to do. But you can't talk about your finances when the hot chick is next to you. You know what I mean? You can't be like, honey, we got to cut the bills, or honey, you know, our trip that we were going to take, maybe we got to lessen it a little bit because taxes are due. You know what I mean? And I think everybody wants to see Cody and Roman do their thing, feud, have another level of their feud. But in the end, it's like you're focusing now on the Saturday fight in the tag team realm. And it's great seeing The Rock's entrance and adding another 10 minutes is, I mean, guys, come on. Television time is precious. Just have The Rock show up with Roman Reigns. You can't have Roman Reigns have a 5-minute entrance and then The Rock have another 5-minute entrance on the same television program. You know,
and that feels weird and clunky. It feels weird and clunky when you're watching it.
Yeah.
Because like, if he acknowledges Roman, shouldn't he be like, I was thinking this as this was unfolding, because like, I'm glad you touched on this. So like, I'm watching Roman come out, and I'm like, all right, well, why isn't The Rock coming with him? So I'm like, okay, well, The Rock's going to get his own entrance. So then he comes out. I'm like, man, that just feels weird and forced.
Yeah.
It is strange. Like this whole story. And I think your analogy of The Rock being the third wheel here and you know, your girlfriend having a super hot friend that's going on a date with you, I think it's a great analogy. I think it's perfect. Yeah. Because that is what it feels like. He feels like he's the third wheel.
Yeah, but he's a big star. He's a prominent figure. He brings eyeballs. The pops are huge. But in the end, you recognize that people have been invested in another feud. I just want to see what Roman has to say about Cody and stuff like that. And it just feels like you have two feuds going on at the exact same time. And the best way to put it is, are we talking about the world title? It feels like it's overshadowed. It should be the focus. It should be Cody. Really, in a keep it simple model, it should be Cody talking to Roman about fulfilling a dream, being able to hoist the, being able to grab the belt, ending the bloodline. Instead, it's now been about The Rock and Cody making fun of each other and slapping each other. So it's just a build that it's just unfortunate because I think they started knowing that The Rock wanted to be involved, but where do you put him? You can't put him with Sami Zayn. You know what I mean? You can't have The Rock fight Andrade. So you got to stick him in the biggest thing, you know? And so that's what's difficult is that you got the four stars. And and also, too, you know, we don't want to be too negative because The Rock is a big star. But I think Seth Rollins said it right. You've had your time already. Now this fight is another match that is going to take away from another guy getting an opportunity, maybe like a Sami Zayn or a Jimmy and a Jey Uso. You're overshadowing, and this match probably is going to need 40 minutes. So, you know, are you going to have a situation where Jimmy and Jey go 12 minutes in a feud that is really invested that people would love to see? Or
yeah, I feel like that feud should get a ton of time.
Yeah, or Bianca Belair's match.
You haven't even really spent any time building to this.
Yeah, or Bianca's match, or a female match that you could go and have more. It's unfortunate, and it does reek of like really history where an old timer comes in and takes up a big spot, and you just, if you're one of the other stars, you got to be a little frustrated because you're like, well, The Rock is Triple H's boy. They're never going to go away from a historic. I guess the best way to put it, cuz, is The Rock is the new Hulk Hogan. And he's back, and he needs some time, and he needs some attention, and he's right there in the main event. And it stinks, but in the end, let's just enjoy the ride and see where it goes, because now you got The Rock taking personal shots at Cody, which I thought was classic on SmackDown. It was good. But, you know, I think the ending of SmackDown should have been Cody whooping his ass. Men slapping each other, you know, I think in 2024 is a little less aggressive than you want. All you got to do is, dude, you call me a mistake to my face, I'm going to kick you. I'm gonna throw up a wrestling punch. Men slapping each other is just not as aggressive in terms of where you'd want to take it, in my opinion.
Yeah, I felt like you could have done a little bit more with that. I didn't mind the slap so much because, look, immediately WWE social media jumps all over it, and they're like a slap for a slap. So they're doing like the eye for an eye type of thing, right? So I get it, but I really felt like you could have done more to close SmackDown out. You could have, at some point, if you could have bought yourself five more minutes, so these guys could have then jockeyed around, and we could have got a little bit more to leave on. It would have been a better closing for SmackDown. Instead, you have the slap. You've got Roman coming over to Rock pushing Roman away, and then we fade to black. And that's kind of where you're left with it. I really felt like you could have added a little bit more intrigue to get more of a reaction from The Rock, to get a little bit maybe more of a pull apart. Honestly, with the back and forth that took place on SmackDown, I felt like the highlight of all of it was probably Seth Rollins.
Yeah.
Seth Rollins' reactions to what either The Rock was saying, to what Roman was saying, or to what Cody was saying was priceless. Seth Rollins getting in The Rock's face and basically screaming at him, I thought was brilliant, and I thought was incredible. And look, you have The Rock really walking this line of possibly saying something that is not going to go over very well and could really get cancel culture involved. He runs this very tight line where he is about to say something that is going to offend somebody. You know what I'm saying? That probably rocks a Skittles-colored flag. And it's incredible to see him walk that line and not cross over it, because he walks right up to it, and he basically licks it, and then he puts it back on the shelf. And he's done this for weeks now, and he does it specifically with Seth Rollins. And Seth Rollins does a really good job not really letting it get underneath his skin, but it is incredible to watch The Rock cut these promos and say these things that are almost obscene. And almost at this day and age, where when Seth Rollins basically calls him a prehistoric dinosaur, it is amazing because the promo that he cuts is very prehistoric. If you really look at the verbiage that he uses and you look at the things that he says, it is very inflammatory for this day and age, which back in the day when The Rock was The Rock and The Rock was in the Attitude Era, those things weren't inflammatory. Those things weren't taboo. what he says now, he walks right up to the line. And Seth Rollins does a great job of being that foil for The Rock. I think Seth Rollins is probably the most underrated player in all of this. If you look at that promo from Friday night, you had Roman saying something, you had The Rock saying something, and you had Seth saying and doing things. And really and truly, I kind of felt like Cody was the lost man in all of this. And that's who the story is supposed to be centered around. And that is who everybody was trying to center the story around. But to me, it kind of felt like Cody got lost in the wash. I don't know. Did you see that at all? Did you feel like that at all? Did you feel like Cody maybe kind of got lost in the mix between what was going on with Roman, what was going on with Rock, what was going on with Seth? And you know what? If you really want to double down on it, I kind of feel like Roman's been a little bit lost in this storytelling. And the story's supposed to center around Cody and Roman. But I feel like the two main players are kind of getting lost in the mix a little bit.
Yeah, because the guys that are saying the things that are the most incendiary are Seth Rollins. And I think that he needs to establish himself after last week calling The Rock diarrhea. And I also think, too, the crowd.
Which was great.
The crowd was chanting.
The crowd chanting that was fantastic.
Exactly. And I think, too, you have to, because look, Cody's established. Everybody knows where his role is. I think you have to kind of, and the thinking would be, okay, we need to establish Seth as being a player in this match. He's not just a throw-in. You know what I mean? So at the same token, you recognize that, you know what? I just think people want to see Cody and Roman. And yeah, I think the attacks really on Seth Rollins' attire is bordering on a little bit, you know, sensitive to some people. But I look at it and I say, I think they should just attack Seth's relevancy. Like, you're just a champion that hasn't done anything. You're just a guy that needed a belt for relevancy. And you can go that route as a dig. You know what I mean? And I just think that his attire, his flashiness, it's been fun to poke at. But yeah, it can cross the line a little bit and get some people riled up. But look, these four dudes, the moment that they had in the ring, you could tell yourself, wow, these are the four biggest stars in the company. Let's go and let's get after it. But it just feels like, and here's what it is. It's 2024, and we all sense that TKO and, you know, the company that's made is now taking this new way, this kind of new UFC style of promos and getting everybody time and the way in which they have the fighting, you know, when the UFC, it's kind of similar. But what we're seeing is kind of, we know it's a new way of promoting matches, but it's not fresh. Four dudes standing in the ring insulting each other, we've seen a million times. I mean, at this point, you could even just have, you know, Cody in his house, and there's The Rock, you know, standing outside surveying what's going on. I mean, I think it would be classic if Brandy's doing a yoga class and there's The Rock just kind of peeking his head in, going, oh, I'm just around. I'm feeling the need to do yoga today. And she's like, what the fuck? And you need to do a little bit more creative type storytelling here. It seems like we're in a new era, but we're telling the story in the same way, where we are resulting to personal insults, microphone time, 25-minute promos. It's, bro, the world is at your oyster. You could do so many different things. I mean, you don't think that Nia Jax fighting Becky Lynch on Raw would have been interesting if Roman Reigns is just standing there and just kind of peeking in, or Solo, you send Solo on the scouting mission to insult and do everything, or you just have Paul Heyman peek in a little bit here and there. So it just has the feel of, hey, we're doing the basics that we need to do, the nuts and bolts of hyping up a fight, but it just feels like you can unlock so many more boxes with where we're at in 2024.
Yeah, I think the one thing that has kind of been lost in this entire build, this is something that you and I really love. We love the vignettes. We love yeah. the backstage creative, the stuff that you can kind of do a lot more with, instead of just kind of doing the same camera angles, standing around the ring and basically waiting for the crowd's reaction. We like the creativeness where you can do something a little bit more intricate. And we're just not really getting that right now. And I think that would add a little bit of a different flavor to it.
Because what would be, I mean, I know you can't reference it, but what would be the biggest edge is that you have a pretend TKO board meeting, and they're talking about promoting WrestleMania, stuff like that. And all of a sudden, Cody walks in. We have somebody here that's not on the schedule. Cody walks in, he's got a folder, but they don't allude to it. And they go, you guys got a big problem on your hands. and we know it's alluding to Vince, but they're like, there's a guy here that's, you know, we got to kind of figure out what to do with. And I think The Rock taking time away is kind of really detrimental to the board. And he drops it down, and you maybe see a mustache, or you see like a close vision of what Vince would be or something like that. It'd be funny as hell. But like I said, the world is at your oyster in terms of storytelling, and you just are doing stuff that's just kind of bland and way old school. But, you know, it's a mass appeal, and that's what they're doing. They're using TV time. But I thought SmackDown could be better if they cut down that segment from 24 minutes down to 12. Just everybody get in the ring, boom, everything happens. I mean, we don't even get to see Grayson Waller's entrance, which I think is great. Theory's entrance is great. We just get into the matches because they know they're taking so much time for the others.
Yeah, it really kind of feels like, again, WWE is really loading up with The Rock, with Roman, and with Cody and Seth. And because of that, everybody else is kind of getting cut. Everything else is kind of getting shortchanged. And again, there's a lot of really good stories that we've been telling for almost a year now, man, that really aren't getting their due. And it's a little bit unfortunate. I think when it's all said and done, I do believe Cody Rhodes beats Roman Reigns. I think Cody Rhodes finishes the story. I think it's going to be great. I think we're going to get a swerve out of this tag match. I think there's going to be something that's going to happen inside this tag match that's going to really set up night two. You have to watch night one because it's going to impact night two. I get where they're going with it all, but at the chance to tell this one story, I feel like you are really diminishing probably five other stories. And I think that's probably the most unfortunate thing. And to be honest with you, the build to this could be done better. It hasn't been done great. And I think that's probably the most unfortunate thing. Something that I think was really, really good. Arguably one of their top five pay-per-views of all time. AEW Revolution took place last Sunday night. What did you think of this pay-per-view? Because this has been critically acclaimed by everybody who's watched it. A lot of people really love this. I want to get your take on it because following along in our group chat, I didn't get to watch it live. I had to go back and watch it. This pay-per-view, according to everybody, seemed to be great. I think you might have had a couple of problems with a couple of things. So I want to get your overall take on it, and then we can kind of get into the granular part of it. We can kind of break down some of these matches and what you had issues with. What did you make of this pay-per-view?
Yeah, I thought, again, you look at a pay-per-view, and just if you look at it overall in terms of style of matches, it was kind of the same across the board. Everybody got a lot of time. Everybody got their shit in. I felt like it was enjoyable start to finish, but here's how I watched it. I had other stuff on the main TV, and I had it on in the background, and you could catch some certain matches and pay attention at certain spots, but 4 hours is a long time for one card, and you recognize there's a lot of matches, a lot of things going. I thought it was well-paced. I thought the timing of the matches was okay, but maybe you could have started a little bit differently based on the match setup. But in the end, I thought it was classy as hell to have Sting go out that way. Maybe our old school thinking got in the way.
Yep.
When you see exactly how it shook out and what it meant to the fans, what it meant to Sting, what it meant to everybody involved. So it built up to the crescendo of Sting, and boy, did it deliver. The pre-fight package that they did was unreal. The fight itself, to see his sons involved, was unreal. To see a crazy spot from Darby was unreal. It was a good match, and then in the end, surprised everybody. But I felt like, you know, what stinks is you realize, okay, what does everybody want to see? They want to see Sting, they want to see the outcome, and they want to see what's going to happen afterwards. And yes, I know we live in a social media age where if something gets cut off, you're going to see it from the crowd within 10 minutes. But I just thought that for the pay-per-view to get cut off in the middle of Sting saying, hey, I got to hit some cues, bye. His last words on television are, oh, I got to hit some cues, bye. It's just not, that's not how you would do it.
That's not how you want to remember him
that's
at all.
That's not on a pay-per-view. And yeah, they just over, you know, in the post-match scrum, they just said, look, you guys all got to see it. We posted it right away. It's not, they minimized it, but it's the little details. And it kind of took away in terms of what would have been an A-plus sending off, but it was still an A pay-per-view. It was really good. I thought everybody involved worked their ass off. And bro, in the end, when you have a match that Takeshka and Will Ospreay had, it was pure magic. It was totally different than anything you saw on the pay-per-view. Everything else was wrestling. It had a story, beginning, middle, end. These guys were just flowing start to finish, natural chemistry. It just built up to such a crescendo. It made the night for me. I loved watching it. I've watched it now twice. And you're like, man, Will Ospreay is going to be special. And now he's in the Big Show at 30 years old. And we've already seen him. We've been talking about him for 3 years, you know. And now he's taking the big dance. And when he's on there, he's the biggest star in the company. He's the guy. And to realize what you have in Will Ospreay and the matches you can have with Takeshko, they were doing some wild-ass shit. And you're just like, whoa, I was glued to the screen top to bottom, start to finish, and I wanted the fight to keep going on with the false finishes, with the move sets, with both of those guys just doing their thing. I was like, oh God, please don't drop each other I thought Takeshka killed Ospreay when he put him in the corner there by the ropes, and you're like, I don't think humans are supposed to drop that way, and you saw the scratch on Ospreay's back. Oh, it was just a 10-star match, in my opinion. It really allowed everybody to get excited, and then you had the Sting match. The one thing that people are talking about, and I'll ask you, did Darby really need to go crashing through real glass? It sent shards into the crowd. You got people there. I think that it should have just been about Sting. You don't need Darby to take crazy risks in the match that should be focused on Sting, because another aspect is, whoa, this fucker's jumping off of a ladder into glass and cutting himself all up. It didn't need to happen. You don't need to risk hurting your fans and having people go, oh, I'm hurt, and you going, yeah, so what? You see the release beforehand, you could be involved in the match. It's like, these are your customers. Like, you don't want to send glass into kids. And I just think it was unnecessary completely.
This is something you and I have talked about before with Darby Allin and his style of wrestling. We both feel like at a certain point he's going to cut his career short because of the stunts that he tries. It's one of those things where, yeah, it was a cool – replay moment. It's a cool spectacle. At the time, you're like, holy shit, this is nuts. But does it really add anything to the match? Did it really add anything to it? Like, could you take that out and would the match still be great? The answer is yes. If you can take it out and the match still be great, then you don't need to add it in. There's no need. It's an unnecessary bump. So this is the one thing you and I have been screaming forever, specifically with Darby Allin. Your body only has so many bumps. It's called a bump card. You can only take so many of these bumps before your body doesn't have it left, before your body can't do it anymore. So at the risk of cutting your career short and really derailing everything good that you've got going on, you do these silly stunts where you have these high impact moments in a match, in these high impact settings where you're doing a coffin drop off of a top rope onto the mat. Like, that's crazy. Like, I don't know if people realize those mats, it's basically like your recreational gym mat when you're working out at the gym. It's kind of that. It there's not a whole lot there. What's underneath that is a concrete floor. You falling down onto that, it hurts. And it again, it beats your body up, and you can only withstand so much of this stuff before things start to break down and you're not the same wrestler you once were. Darby Allin is one of those wrestlers where he's not built for a long time, but he's built for a good time. And while he's here, he's going to give you everything he's got, and it's going to be a good time. I really wish Darby Allin would start to dial some of these things in and just try to protect himself a little bit. I think he's got a really long, great career ahead of him, but he's gotta slow it down a little bit. He's gotta stop with some of those risks. And look, it was I think what you are saying is absolutely right. There are little nuances that AEW could do to kind of tweak and fine-tune things. And you really see a lot of I guess better handling, a more of a deft touch when you start to fine tune and you get a little bit better with your timing, your pacing, your production. All these little things make your product more refined and give it much more of a crisp, sharp appearance. There are still some things with AEW where it kind of feels a little indie show-esque. And I don't ever really want that to necessarily go away, but I do want the production to get better. And I think that could really help ratchet things up. But I do think you're right. It does feel like AEW has hit the reset button, right? You look at AEW's roster and you just go to this pay-per-view and then you go to what took place on Dynamite. You end up losing arguably the best wrestler in the world in Kenny Omega. We don't know how long Kenny Omega is going to be sidelined for. We don't know what's going to happen with Kenny Omega. I do believe at some point Kenny Omega will come back, but Kenny Omega is going to be out for what sounds like a little bit longer. And what does AEW do? They go out and they get arguably the next best wrestler, the guy who actually went head-to-head with Kenny Omega and challenges Kenny Omega to be the best wrestler on the planet. And right now, he is the best wrestler on the planet in Will Ospreay. Will Ospreay's match against Takeshita,
wow.
There were veterans in the back who had no idea who the hell Will Ospreay was, which blows my mind, but had no idea who the hell Will Ospreay was, and they left after that match saying, this guy is incredible. This guy is fantastic. That was the talk in the back after the match. So you set yourself up there. Then you fast forward to what takes place on Wednesday night when you get the biggest star from New Japan to sign with you in Okada. And it's like all of a sudden you've just reloaded. And the product has been better. There's something that you and I have done. We have killed AEW week in, week out because the product has been stale. It hasn't been very good. You reload now and you get Will Ospreay. You get Okada. I think we can both agree. Swerve is right now the next best thing since sliced bread. Swerve Strickland has been absolutely fantastic. They're going to do this whole angle with Hangman, and it's going to be good. You get Kenny Omega back. All of a sudden, that roster looks incredibly bloated with a shit ton of talent, and it's going to be really, really good. I think it all started with this pay-per-view, and let's jump into this pay-per-view. Let's start going through some of these matches. We had our pre-show. We get into the main show. We've got Christian Cage, who ends up defeating Daniel Garcia for the AEW TNT Championship. It feels like this upcoming week, you could have Christian Cage lose that belt to Edge or Adam Copeland. Adam Copeland showed up on Dynamite and hit Nick Wayne with a chair and then chased Christian through the arena and challenges him for that TNT Championship. I do believe you could see that belt change hands. Either that or we're going to get a prolonged storyline between these two and we'll continue it to a pay-per-view. Eddie Kingston ends up defeating Bryan Danielson for the AEW Continental Championship. He retains that. In the end, Bryan Danielson has to shake Eddie Kingston's hand. What did you make of this match? You and I are both Eddie Kingston fans. Both of us love Bryan Danielson. Eddie Kingston earns the respect of Bryan Danielson, and this sets Bryan Danielson up for his next storyline versus Okada, which we'll talk about in a little bit. What did you make of this match?
Oh, man. It was great to see afterwards where Eddie Kingston was like, man, all I wanted was to gain the respect of the boys. And Eddie Kingston, look, still rocking the singlet, still doing the thing that, you know.
Wearing sweatpants and Tim's.
Yeah, he's got it. Like I said, I think he can just drop 5 pounds, get a little more muscular, and look a little bit less like a guy. He looks like the Brooklyn Brawler 2.0. Like, you gotta step it up a little bit. And it was crazy. And I think something people noticed was a lot of wrestlers on this pay-per-view were wearing black tights across the board in terms of all the male wrestlers. And you recognize that the flair and the dramatics. I just think Eddie Kingston's presentation, his in-ring work is fine. His respect level's fine. I just think you got to change it up a little bit in terms of his ring attire. He's got to be a little bit more serious. I mean, I don't mind if he just wears blue jeans, black blue jeans, and go topless. You know what I mean? You got to just go do your thing or wear a t-shirt, you know? But in the end, the match told a good story, and it stinks, though, because I just wish there was another wrestler that could have taken the loss that would have given Kingston some respect, because Danielson's a big-time wrestler, but kind of feels like he's going the AJ Styles route right now where he's a big star, but he's putting over the card and the roster right now, and it's just unfortunate because Danielson should be a champion, should be in the mix. But it feels like he's just going from feud to feud and not really, you know, winning some of these matches, which is interesting to see where he goes in 2024.
Well, you know, I wonder if that changes with Okada showing up and Okada now coming to AEW. Like I said, we'll get to some more reaction of that a little bit later on. I'm expecting a long feud between those two. I'm expecting him to get a big win over Okada at some point. I don't know if Okada goes 2-1 over him, or maybe Danielson goes 2-1 over Okada. I would assume that Danielson would be in the position to help put Okada over since he's the new guy. But I think he gets a big win over Okada at some point, and I'm assuming we're going to get a best 2 out of 3 here. What are your thoughts on that future match since we're talking about Bryan Danielson?
I think it'd be great. I think there's a lot of great matches that he's still got left. You realize that, you know, he's a leader, he's a great wrestler, great in-ring technician, and man, it's going to be great to see all the feuds with Ospreay, Okada, with Omega when they come back. You realize there's so much that they can do if he splits away from the Blackpool Combat Club. You just go back into feuds with, you know, Claudio or John Moxley. There's so much they can do with Bryan Danielson. That'll be great to see. I expect him to do a lot of good things, and I think that he represents kind of what AEW is, a veteran leader that does a lot of good things. As long as he's not fining the boys in the back for their behavior and he stays away from the backstage politics, then he'll be okay moving forward.
All right, after that, we've got Wardlow winning the All-Star Scramble match. No big surprise to either one of us there. Something a little bit shocking to us, and we talked about this. We kind of dove into this match a little bit, and we kind of had the conversation. Roderick Strong ends up defeating Orange Cassidy. We both picked Orange Cassidy when we were given our predictions. I said, I feel like Roderick Strong should win this match, especially if they want to help make the Undisputed Kingdom relevant. Roderick Strong and Orange Cassidy put on a banger of a match, and Roderick Strong comes out the winner in this match. What did you make of this match? At the end of this, you get Kyle O'Reilly showing back up. Kyle O'Reilly's been off TV for 2 years, going through a neck fusion. Roderick Strong invites him into the kingdom with him, and Kyle O'Reilly basically says, "Nah, I got to do it my own way." What did you make of all this? I thought this was a great match, and I find it interesting that Kyle O'Reilly said no to Roddy.
Yeah, it was good. You actually, because when the match ended, I went back and listened to our podcast because I thought you had said that, you know what, in order to establish Roderick's faction, that it would be really great to get him the win. And it was actually really fair, really good analysis, but I just thought that, you know, you and I both thought that Orange Cassidy was the bigger star. And you realize, yeah, man, Adam Cole doing his thing, getting that group, handling their business. And Roderick Strong, I think, you know what, looking back at it, I think it's great for him to be the AEW International Champion. So we got to kind of, you know, maybe make it happen where Roderick Strong fights Eddie Kingston and we can unite the AEW Continental Championship with the AEW International Championship and have one overseas belt, because it's not, it really doesn't make any sense. You know what I mean? You know, so let's maybe combine a belt here. But Roderick Strong and Kyle O'Reilly, man, he looked different. I was like, who's that? Because he looked like he hadn't slept in 4 weeks. But
dude, it looked like he pulled some dirty clothes out of the laundry and showed up for a wrestling event.
Yeah, it's Kyle O'Reilly. But yeah, there's intrigue there with the group. And it'll be interesting now moving forward to see where Kyle O'Reilly fits in. And those guys with the neck fusions, man, you recognize 2 years is a long time, but it went by quick. It was like, holy crap, he was gone. We recognized he was injured, but now he's back and he can hopefully resume his career and stay healthy. That's most important.
Do you think that they maybe bring Bobby Fish back at some point? Bobby Fish was released probably almost 2 years ago. And to be honest with you, he hasn't really done a whole ton on the indie scene. Do you think maybe they bring him back? I mean, again, Bobby Fish was part of that group. He was with Kyle O'Reilly. They were the Red Dragon in Ring of Honor. Then they were the Undisputed Era in NXT with Adam Cole. And look, there was at one point AEW had all four members of that Undisputed Era group, just not all at the same time. It was when Roddy Strong came in that Bobby Fish ended up leaving and Kyle O'Reilly was sidelined with an injury. Do you think maybe they bring Bobby Fish back and they kind of reunite that group and they add in Matt Taven and Mike Bennett and Wardlow and they really strengthen that group and make it a bigger faction? Do you think that maybe happens?
Maybe it's being pushed for, but it's tough because you really got to do some work to get Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish back up to that level. You know what I mean? They've kind of fallen off in regards to their relevancy. And it just feels like the group right now with Adam Cole and the way it is, with they've upgraded. And I think Wardlow and the two guys from TNA are absolutely perfect for what they need. I don't think you need them. But if you add them, yeah, if you feel like you can get something out of them. But it just feels like Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish, their time to be as relevant as they need to be is probably over.
All right. We then had Blackpool Combat Club defeating FTR. Timeless Toni Storm ends up defeating Deonna Purrazzo as she defends her AEW Women's World Championship. We then had the match of the night. We've talked about it a little bit already. Will Ospreay defeats Takeshita. Fantastic match. Like, if you could give it as many stars as you could give it, this was that match. Will Ospreay announced himself to the AEW crowd, to the AEW world in this match. And look, Takeshita comes out looking strong as well in this. There were two guys who got made in this match, and it was an absolutely fantastic match. What was your favorite part of this? Because I know that you are now one of the biggest Will Ospreay fans. Over the course of the last, I'd say probably 2 or 3 years, you've become an increasingly bigger Will Ospreay fan with each match that you see. We've both been high on Takeshita. We kind of feel like he's been misused in AEW. Look, I think both guys came out the winner in this match, even though Will Ospreay gets the win in this match.
Dude, I jumped out of my seat when he did the crossbody and landed on his feet. I was like, what the hell? What kind of athleticism does it take to – I watched it again. I was like, what kind of athleticism does it take to be able to turn your body sideways, crash into another man, get your body upright, land on your feet, and make it look like a walk in the park? I was like, what the hell is this? And you can't – if anybody watches wrestling and you're a fan of Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, Seth Rollins, you realize, you know, you and Kenny, credit to you guys, you first brought me to the guy – and said, watch this guy's matches, and then you just go over to YouTube. And that's what sucks is that they got to put New Japan kind of a little bit from wherever they are to something more prominent, at least to the CW or somewhere where a human can scroll through it accidentally. I never, ever, before you guys told me to watch New Japan, I never came across it. Yeah, you'd hear about Wrestle Kingdom and stuff like that, but it never hit the radar. You and Kenny said, hey, watch New Japan. There's some people out there, you WWE snob, and you said, watch Okada, watch Will Ospreay. So I said, okay, I'll listen, I'll watch. And then when you watch it, you're like, what the fuck is this? This guy does not belong in New Japan. This guy belongs on the big stage. And you recognize he was only in his 20s. Like, the man's 30 years old, going to have a 10-year run in a company, hopefully AEW, which now clearly you realize, okay, they have staying power. If they're signing Ospreay and Okada to multi-million dollar deals, they hopefully get some monies in from streaming or their next TV deal. And it's clear they needed some star power to get their next TV deal, and they waited as long as humanly possible, and now they can negotiate, and they can say, look, we got Okada, we got Will Ospreay, we got some more star power that we can bring here. Look how we treat our own and stuff like that. So, man, if AEW can get a nice TV deal or a nice streaming deal and they can infuse, the next step is to get just that one perfect WWE star to go over there. It probably won't be Drew McIntyre, but in that vein, go steal someone that, you know, can be something, because even though, you know, we all look at homegrown talent and stuff like that, WCW kicked it off when they got Hall and Nash and they put them with Hogan. And that's when they started getting 5-6 million viewers. So you got to time it right. You got to get the right person. But for right now, holy shit, Will Ospreay. Could you imagine Will Ospreay, Takeshita again? Ospreay versus Bryan Danielson, Ospreay versus Jay White, Ospreay versus MJF. I mean, my God, every match feud that this guy's going to have is interesting. And he's funny as hell. He's cheeky, as they say. And I think and AEW's style is perfect. He can wrestle on a Wednesday, hang out in the hotel on Thursday, fly out Friday back home. He doesn't have to show up, you know, if he times it right, doesn't have to come back till Tuesday. He can work 2 weeks, take 2 weeks off. It's a great opportunity to make him an attraction, and you just got to put the rocket ship on him. And I don't know if it should be him that defeats Samoa Joe. I don't know if you take it slow and you have him start by winning the AEW Combined Continental Intercontinental Championship, whatever. Win them both.
The overseas belts.
Yeah, yeah. He starts with the overseas belts, and he goes through Kingston, goes through Roderick Strong, and hopefully then they go, you know what, fuck it, let's just give him the overseas belt and call it something cool. And then you go about his business, and then he works his way up to Samoa Joe or whoever it is that takes it off of Samoa Joe. But whew, the future's bright with Will Ospreay. Super athletic, does all the moves. I just kind of love it that he does the Styles Clash. It always looks a little bit awkward because it's not AJ Styles doing the move, but it looks good. The crowd loves him, and man, he's going to be a star. It's just weird because the only note I put was his involvement with the Callis family is kind of out of place. Mm-hmm. Like, just the man should just be his own man. Like, I'm part of the Callis family, but it's like he's a member, but not like a member doesn't attend the meetings. It's like, okay, you know what I mean? It's like by name only. Like, I don't know. I don't think that that's needed in any kind of capacity because Will Ospreay doesn't need a faction to get over. He's over. He's the star of the faction. And then look, he goes on then to have another banger with his boy Kyle Fletcher, and Kyle Fletcher gets over because Kyle Fletcher is a star. He already had the rub from his friendship with Will Ospreay, but then they have another TV match.
Do you realize both of those guys are so young?
Yeah.
Like Will Ospreay and Kyle Fletcher. I think Kyle Fletcher's like 25 or 27.
Yes.
And he looked like an absolute stud on Dynamite. And you've already talked about Will Ospreay being like 30. Like these dudes are so young and they're not even in the prime of their career yet. It's crazy.
They're 5 years away. Kyle Fletcher's 25 years old. And yeah, exactly. When Will Ospreay hits 35 to 40, if it's a 5-year deal, I mean, you make the run, maybe you get the WrestleMania run, but it just feels like AEW is the right spot for these guys right now. It's the wrestling company, and he doesn't need to be the star. I think that great opportunity for him to get all the work that he needs to reach his potential in AEW right now.
You know what's funny? A lot of times I watch these weird videos on Facebook or on YouTube or whatever it is. And as a wrestler, you don't really hit your prime of your career until you're about 40. You know, it's that window between like 35, 36 to like 42.
Yes.
That's generally your prime. That is when you've kind of put all the pieces together.
Yes.
You're able to cut that great promo. You're able to build that story. You're able to do what you need to do. There's a lot of wear and tear on your body, but you figured it out. You know when to put that big bump in. You know how to sell. And it is in that window. And you're looking at a guy right now who is 30, who's not even close to that yet, who is approaching his prime, but he is still years away from it. And a guy like Kyle Fletcher, who is many years away from it. He's a decade away from his prime, a decade plus away from his prime. And these guys are giving you awesome matches and telling incredible stories right now.
You know what?
Go ahead.
I do want to ask because it's interesting because AEW does have a lot of older wrestlers. It seems like the model is all the younger wrestlers from like 27 to 35 are hyped up by WWE and then they can go off to AEW. I think that's not bad, but I think too a situation in which an Ospreay where he does a lot of his work from 30 to 35 in AEW. Then, like the AJ Styles model, where you get your career going, and then you have that run from 37 to 47, where you go 200 days a year. I think AEW promotes longevity. In that thinking, if it was you, which way would you like it? Would you like to be a star first and then grind 200 days a year in WWE, or would you like to kind of put the wear and tear on your body early, get the money, and then? Because I think I would like that. I'd like to start off at WWE, 28 years old, work 4 or 5 years, become a big star, command big money, and then you're 33, and then you go, you know what? I used to work 200 days a year. Now I'm going to work 100 days a year, double my money, and then become kind of go that route where you can then go, you know what? From 33 to 50, I can wrestle and be fresh and have a long life. I would go WWE, AEW in a career if you're a big-time wrestler because I think AEW schedule is great. Like, cause the WWE schedule is sick, bro. When Cody Rhodes puts up his schedule, he's working 16 dates a year, 16 dates a month. And I'm like, my God, dude, that's a lot of dates. Probably he's in the 150 to 175 range of matches, but that's a lot of matches. And I think AEW is probably a third of that, where all these guys are wrestling 60 matches a year.
Yeah, I would go definitely with WWE to AEW because I feel like there's WWE does a really good job of helping you learn parts of the business.
By reps, yep.
And by being younger, your body can withstand that a little bit. By the time you get to AEW, you'll be like, oh, man, this is a vacation. Let's go. Yes. Like, am I even doing work? You know, you'll be so trained on doing 200 plus, almost 300 days a year that when you get to doing 100, you're like, holy cow, I'm working half the time and I'm making more money. Let's go.
Let's go.
So, that's the way I would do it. To kind of wrap up this pay-per-view, we had a fantastic AEW World Championship match. We had Samoa Joe, who ends up defeating Swerve Strickland and Hangman Page. A really good job by commentary to sell Hangman in his motives to end this match. So during this match, as it was unfolded, Swerve and Hangman were getting lost in the sauce, and just their hatred for each other really kind of detracted from them winning a championship. They were just trying to hurt each other. In the end, you have Samoa Joe get Hangman Page in his submission move, and Hangman ends up tapping out, and commentary did a good job. Did he tap out because he needed to tap out, or did he tap out to prevent Swerve from winning the belt?
Yes.
And it was a really good job to leave you on that little bit of a cliffhanger. Hangman Page has some personal things going on. He has been written off of TV for a little bit. Now leave Swerve there to face up against Samoa Joe. You've got Wardlow in the mix as he won that AEW All-Star Scramble match. So you've got a lot of really good things here. A multifaceted story leaves you with a bit of a cliffhanger. So when Hangman comes back, thought it was really, really well done. Then brings us to our main event. Sting and Darby Allin end up defeating the Young Bucks for the AEW World Tag Team Championships. A little bit of behind the scenes. Sting was the only one who wanted to do the job for the Young Bucks. The Young Bucks and Darby Allin wanted to put Sting over in his final match of his career. This was a fantastic way to go out. This was really well done. We've kind of touched on what happened with the ending of it all. But overall, this was the way to send a man out. This was absolutely fantastic. In the end, he had his kids come out with him, dressed up as Rainbow Sting and dressed up as Red Wolfpack Sting. It was really, really fantastic. It was a great sending off of an icon, of a guy who gave us a lot of great memories as kids. Sting has ended his career, and he ended his career as the AEW World Tag Team Champion. And they will now put those belts up in a tournament, and we'll see who wins those. But because of all of that, we now have a champion of our own. Doc ends up winning this year's Calling the Card. We end up splitting the points. We end up getting 1.5 each. You end up winning by 2 this year. You ended up defeating me 15-13 in the Calling the Card. Congratulations to you. Great job on Calling the Card.
Yes. Does that even it up 2 years? I think it's 2-2 now. We each take
2-2, I believe. Yep.
Yeah. Wow. That was good shit, man.
It's one of those things, too, where we've alternated every year, year.
That's what I thought, too, as well. I went back and looked at it, and I was like, oh, man, this has been fun. Yes, I'd like to make a speech here to claim my throne. It was a tough challenge this year. the increase of difficulty, I thought, makes my title reign the best one of all time, knowing that there were so many different events, way more to look into, way more to read. So I feel like my win is the greatest win in the history of wins. And predicting matches is not easy, knowing that, you know, bookers can change things on a whim. We predicted 28. I got over 50% of the wins. So I feel like my title range will go on down in the Mount Rushmore of predictions. And I can't wait to I can't wait to defend my title in 2024, starting with WrestleMania. Thanks, everybody, for all your support and riding along with the journey. It meant a lot to me to have you guys know that I had your support all year, and I came through in the end and defeated Adam, who was a worthy opponent but not good enough to supplant the man, the legend, the DOC. Thanks, everyone. Let's go, baby. And I want to ask you this, though, because we didn't touch on it. Something broke on SmackDown that I didn't like, and it's just, quite frankly, gross. The Red Wings added the priority patch to their jersey, ruining an iconic jersey. I don't want to see Prime on a WWE ring. It's jarring. It's different. Yeah. I know it's money. Put it on a rope. Put it on a turnbuckle. Put it in the corner.
Turnbuckle.
I don't need... When I saw it, it looked hideous. I don't like it. I'm not a fan. I know Logan Paul's the shit, and he wants to put his shit everywhere. Bro, just have... Walk out there with a Prime, have Pat McAfee scream to the high heavens that he likes Prime. I don't want to see that. It looks gross. It takes away. It's too big. It takes away. I think a clean ring is what everybody's been seeing for 50 years. So I didn't like it. And I was like, oh man, forever. I hope they were trolling, but I could see them doing it. And someone posted a picture of the UFC ring now where it's just littered with sponsorships. look, I get the money aspect of it, but man, I'm not a fan at all.
Yeah, I don't like it either. It was jarring. And honestly, it's a little bit upsetting because, like you said, put it on a turnbuckle. Put it on a rope. Put it anywhere. Anywhere else.
Wear a prime shirt. Where everybody in the arena can get a prime shirt, prime day, whatever you got to do. I don't need to see it on the ring. All right, cuz, is it that time of the show? Is it time for professional wrestling news and notes?
Yes, sir. Are you ready?
I'm ready. What made your list? I know a lot of big things have happened. I'm very curious. What made your list?
All right. AEW is adding to its growing pay-per-view list. Originally, AEW had its big three or four pay-per-views, with Tony Khan recently saying he'd like to get it up to about 9 pay-per-views a year. Well, at Revolution, AEW announced that their next and newest pay-per-view will be AEW Dynasty. This pay-per-view will take place in St. Louis, Missouri on Sunday, April 21st, 2024. What do you think about this increase for AEW pay-per-views? At this particular pay-per-view, we're going to get Danielson Okada. It's already been announced that's going to be the match. So what do you think about expanding, going basically doubling and tripling your original number of pay-per-views? I kind of feel like it's a little bit too much.
But 4 or 5 is a little too little. So I think that 8 to 10 is a sweet spot for a company because you need to kind of bring end to a lot of these feuds. And that's what we've said. You can't have feuds that last 3 months. That's kind of what diluted, I think, a lot of the television situation. So I like it. 8 to 10 will be good. And I love the fact that the New Japan ones are going to stick around. So I think that the increase will just only increase revenue, which is good for overall for the company.
All right. While AEW adds a pay-per-view, they have lost a wrestler. Oh. Late last week, it was rumored that Mike Santana is no longer with AEW after being removed from the company's roster page. Late on Monday, Fightful Select was able to confirm that per sources close to the wrestler, Santana is officially done with AEW. Santana and AEW parted ways last week. The report noted that Santana hadn't been backstage at an AEW show in months. Despite this, Santana has been active on the independent scene. His most recent match took place on Sunday, March 3rd, at an ETU event. There are some more subtractions coming for AEW, though. On Thursday, Kevin Kelly was rumored to be removed from the AEW roster page, and it was being reported that he was absent from Saturday's AEW Collision taping. At the Collision taping for the show set to air this Saturday night, which would typically feature Kevin Kelly, Tony Schiavone, and Nigel McGuinness on the call. Only Schiavone and McGuinness were seated on the commentary booth. Recently, Kelly made comments on social media about his position in AEW, which caused some controversy. According to PW Torch, Kelly gained a lot of attention when he went on Twitter last weekend and accused ROH announcer Ian Riccaboni of sabotaging his career and of libel. When you go out of your way to intentionally mischaracterize my raising awareness of global horrors of child trafficking to a fringe conspiracy theory that everyone knows is bullshit in order to hurt my career and standing in the industry, that is at the very least a libelous, wrote Kelly. Kelly would also post about his dissatisfaction with how he was being used in AEW typing, but the idea of what I bring to the table is lost there because Ian libeled me. Wrote Kelly. So I sit on the bench, valued by my peers, waiting to get my number called. Keep asking why, but get pushed aside. It's okay because there's no one better than me. Ask the ones who know, and they'll tell you. Per PW Torch, due to this, Kelly was fired by AEW. AEW adding and subtracting, and AEW adding a suspension now. A current AEW star has been suspended by the company following the fallout of a recent television match they had. In the episode of AEW Rampage taped back on February 14th, Sammy Guevara faced off against Jeff Hardy in singles action. During the match, Hardy suffered a concussion, with Guevara then proceeding to hit his finisher, the GTS, on Hardy. After the match, Hardy could hardly stand without help and needed assistance to get to the back. In an update from Fightful Select, AEW has since suspended Sammy Guevara in relation to the match as the concussion protocol was not followed, and Sammy hitting Jeff with his finisher was not supposed to have happened. Fightful was not given any specifics on how long Sammy's suspension will last. Sammy worked a no disqualification match with Powerhouse Hobbs back on February 24th's episode of Rampage, with the belief being that this was a way to write him off television. This will be Sammy's fourth suspension since signing with AEW, and there is no timetable for Jeff Hardy's return to AEW. Sticking with the Hardys, Jeff's brother Matt is said to have his contract expiring soon. Speaking on his Extreme Life podcast, Matt Hardy confirmed that his contract is set to expire in March. Hardy joined AEW in March of 2020. Vince McMahon is cashing in again. A new SEC filing by WWE's parent company TKO reveals that Vince McMahon is selling nearly $412 million of his company's stock. The filing was submitted on March 4th, 2024. It notes that McMahon is selling 5,350,000 shares of Class A common stock. That comes to a value of $411,950,000. The approximate date of sale is listed as March 4th with Morgan Stanley as the broker. As noted by Brandon Thurston of WrestleNomics, McMahon still owns about 9% of TKO stock after this transaction, which is about 15 million shares. It's a ton. It's a ton of money. This WWE star said, "I do." So finally, WWE star Dominic Mysterio, real name Dominic Gutierrez, was wedded to his longtime girlfriend on March 7th, 2024. Dirty Dom met his real-life partner over 10 years ago at the age of 14. Dominic Mysterio announced his engagement to Marie Juliet in January of 2023. Among his groomsmen were fellow WWE stars Damian Priest and Austin Theory. Rhea Ripley, Mommy, also attended the event. It looked like it was a good time. As he was trying to make an announcement and give a speech, he was booed heavily by the crowd. It was actually a pretty cool video to see. And that's going to do it for this week's wrestling news and notes.
Make sure you follow Adam on Twitter at AdamRSTROZ. Follow the network at Detroit Podcast. A great hour breaking down the world of professional wrestling. Anywhere that you subscribe and listen to your favorite podcast, just type in Detroit Sports Podcast and our content will find you. A great week. AEW Revolution really put a spark in a lot of people because now you got AEW on the rise. You got some intriguing storylines with some top stars, and you don't even have Omega back yet, which will be interesting to see when he officially makes his return. I can't wait for next week to break down again how Seth Rollins and Cody Rhodes progress after the slap heard round the world. Cuz, thank you so much for spending the hour breaking down wrestling. I can't wait for next week for the latest and greatest edition of the Doc and Jock Wrestling Podcast.